we're both building business models. We're like trying to like do it properly. I think that's really cool.
I think yeah too.
I think yeah. You gave some great advice at the end of last episode where I had shown you my latest update with the fourth page on the protocol that had a point system to help people kind of evaluate what things were important, give themselves a number, and, you know, and keeping the game, you know, theme going. And you give some great feedback that maybe there shouldn't be negative numbers because people don't like losing points. And some other reasons. And I thought that was all really great. And, well, actually, I didn't like that advice at all. But
No.
I heard where it was coming from, yes. And I appreciate it for what it is. And so my mind started going more and more on that. So I changed the sheet and made it so that it's all positive numbers. And that's fine. I think it works just as well. And it's just my... a little part of my brain that's like, man, I want it the other way, but it's fine. And then I started thinking in kind of two separate areas that really got me going. One, there could be multiple kinds of points. It doesn't all have to be one solid point structure. And so things from the... So you could earn red points for avoiding toxins and green points for getting nutrients and blue points for self-care. And they could all tally up together as orange points or, you know, however I would get to the point where it's structured like that. But then you can also know, like, from the different columns, like, because they should kind of be equal-ish. And, like, you should be trying to kind of work on all... areas, and so it can give you a little bit more clarity on maybe it like on this column you're not making as many points, so maybe bring up this column a little bit more, kind of giving you a clear outlook on maybe what areas you should try working on more next.
I'm thinking of the wedges from Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah.
So there is
filling
a pie,
up a meter,
and you pick up different. Yeah, you're sort of filling up the wedge for each segment of your pie, and there might only be three or four segments. But you know, for sort of mind, body, spirit, for example,
sure.
And so you know. You get spirit points or you get body points, you get mind points, and the idea is to balance up to a total.
Yeah. Hmm. I was already kind of feeling this way before that, but especially after coming to this kind of expanded way of tracking, that the point sheet that I have is the fourth page, like that could be fun for some people, but it's a lot of work to tally up everything in addition to all the work that a person needs to do to go through the protocol, which is already a lot, filling out the sheet every day and tallying your points and writing a few sentences, like that's a lot to ask. And so I was trying to think of ways to make that easier. And one of the ways that sings with me is making an app, whether that be a web app or an iPhone, Android app. But like having something where you can just quickly answer questions, like I did with Dailyo, my health tracking app, I can just quickly hit a bunch of buttons and I track my day, and it takes like 2 minutes at most. You can just quickly go on there and tap a few things, and it, you know, it already has the God mode structure in there, so you can just tap your things and it can ask appropriate questions, so you don't have to like. There's layered things. So like if you get A, it can ask you B. But if you don't get A, it won't ask you B because it's not applicable because you didn't get A. So you wouldn't have gotten B, and other things like, you know, other ways of tracking progress in the app, I think that would be great. Plus, like, seeing data over time, I really appreciate that. You can see your score rise. You can see graphs of a bunch of different things. I want to collect data and share that data with the person. And yeah, actually, I have a whole big long list of things that I want to do in the app. You know, especially like the easy endpoints of data, the three colored points. I'm thinking down the road, like it'd be cute if there were little animations for logging your wins and like explosions.
Oh, yeah. There's always room for satisfying little bloops and bleeps and things like that. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You can put your journal entries in there, and that could be, you know, audio recorded or text or however you want to do it, or even, you know, little video, selfie videos.
I just had the thought of like little audio messages from or videos from you.
That's also kind of a part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be cool. Like, hey, well done. You did really well this week kind of thing. And here's mm-hmm. a special reward. Because, you know, if the more you can tap into the reward center of the brain and you know, give people those good vibes for you know, doing the good stuff.
Yeah. And so, and your progress by doing logs, you would, like the points aren't just going to be points for you, but they would actually also be points to unlock things within the app. Because a long time ago, and what I still want to do is I had the idea of making shards, as I called them, or DIs, as TBM calls them, or meditations, as most other people would call them. And you know, a self-guided, self-hypnosis kind of audio thing to listen to. And so you make your first log and you unlock your first shard. And then you do like another 20 and you get your second shard or whatever. You do other things, you get, you know, there's certain milestones that are either hidden or not hidden, and you can unlock those or other things, and you can keep growing it within the app. So the app actually, even though it's just a freaking log, it is a game in itself, and there's things to unlock. And I think that could be super cool. Plus, like achievements, you know, scorecards on that. Like a scorecard export. So your daily log could be exported to be shared on social media, of course. And the app would have its own digestible format of reading the protocol and understanding it instead of just the static sheet. It could be more interactive. It could have the I Will Not Tell You What to Do podcast in it. It could have little greetings from me. I love that idea. And there's so much that can happen in the app. I'm a bit obsessed with it. Now I feel like this is the way.
Fucking every day. Welcome to my world.
Yeah.
Now imagine that like every 2 months.
Yeah, no thank you.
No thank you.
No thank you. One at a time, no please. Deal. One at a time.
God, I'm loving this so much. I'm loving this so much.
So I was also thinking about like money, like, because this is going to take a lot of time to develop. I might need to hire somebody. I might need to use some services that cost money. So that's all interesting. Plus, I would like to make money for what I do. That's cool. So yeah, so I was thinking about money from God mode in general, and there were six areas where I feel like I could make revenue from God mode. One, the app that we just discussed. So there could be a small subscription to unlock some extra features. There could be, you could make payment, you could buy like shards or other things within the app as a digital purchase, and you could pay to unlock everything, like a $100 lifetime unlock of all features or something like that instead of a subscription. Some different options there just within the app. There could be a second category would be digital purchases. So buying the God Mode strategy guide online course kind of thing that I was originally intending to make, shard meditation downloads, that Notion guide that you and I had talked about, and different digital purchases like from my website. Of course, one-on-one coaching would be another category. Group coaching would be another category. I feel like those are kind of separate. Retreats would be is absolutely something that I really want to do, and I'm working with Percy, my men's group coach, to collaborate on something like that. And then lastly, products sold through the website or the app. And these would not be things like supplements.
No powders.
Yeah, no powders. No powders at all. Yes. That's a great way to put it. Because that really encapsulates it. Because there's no pills, no supplements, no powders. Oh my God. It's the last thing we need. But it would be things like God Mode branded red lens glasses, or the loot crate that we talked about, books that are recommended, and maybe even recommended foods, water bottles, merch and stuff like that. That's a great idea too. So I feel like there's a breadth of options there. And that made me really happy, because I was kind of thinking that it was just going to kind of be the one-on-one coaching calls. And I didn't really think that maybe would cover everything, or be to warrant all the work going into it. But I think with the spread, seems pretty exciting that there's so many options there, and there's so many options for different people to get what they want and need in different areas, and not necessarily one single package everybody has to get.
How would you like me to respond?
Any and every way that you that comes to mind. Okay. I have not done a digital business before, and I'm flying blind.
I want to frame this the right way. Do you want help with making the digital business happen, making the app happen, or do you want to know what I think?
Yes. Do I have to choose one or the other?
Yes.
Oh shoot, that's a real Sophie's choice here. Like, I feel like it'd be much more benefit. Wow. No.
Do you want me to give you the spoiler?
Yes, please help me out here.
Is if you pick it, one of us always tells the truth and one of us always lies. If you pick option B. Uh-huh. Option B is, I don't think you should do the app yet.
Mm. Okay.
I think you should note down everything you want to do.
Yes, I'm making a lot of notes.
So given that is the case.
Sure.
Do you want me to help advise on the app, or do you want me to tell you what I think?
Okay. Yeah. No, tell me what you think. I get you now.
All right. Because what I think is Brendan Hutchins needs to be, and this is something that's fresh in my mind as well, for me, is Brendan Hutchins needs to be known for God Mode, and people need to know what God Mode is.
Sure.
The app is not how that happens.
Right.
The app facilitates something later down the line when you've proven the idea and proven the demand for the God Mode protocol. Because what this all impinges on, or what this is all based on, is the protocol.
Yeah.
And that needs battle testing, and it needs to be out in the world, and it needs to be talked about. Yeah. I don't think it has to be ready yet. I don't think it has to be finished. I think it can still be evolving. But I think it has to be out in the world. And then in a year or 2 years, and in that intervening time, I'm sure there are ways to make money, by the way. But in that, I think what you've got to do is build a wide base, so that then you can go, hey, we've been working on this, and actually maybe any money you do earn through coaching, which I think is a good lucrative way of doing this, mm-hmm. Either on a group basis or one-to-one. You'll probably earn a lot more one-to-one, but it'll be easier to do it in group.
Yeah.
And in some ways you might earn more because you can, in fact, it's probably more lucrative doing it in group. Anyway, so that you could take the lion's share of that money, if not all of it, as long as you're working elsewhere, and put that money towards the development of the God Mode app. And then once you've got people who are on the in the system, they get the protocol, they're in the Discord, they are in the tent, they're on the email list, they're in all the places. And I don't mean necessarily social media, but you've actually got their handle and you can pull on that handle to say, you've been waiting for it, you've asked for it, because that's another thing, like, do we know people want this? Here it is, here's the God Mode app. Let's get you in, test flight, get people downloading the app, testing it out, and then go far and wide that way. That's what I think.
With the the advice I don't want to hear.
No,
I get it. I get that. It's good to have testers. It's good to have a base, a track record.
Because the app isn't, and this is a mistake that lots of people made in the sort of, and I hated it when Apple described it. I think Steve Jobs or Tim Cook described it as the next gold rush.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was so ill-advised a phrase.
Yeah.
Because what happens when the gold's gone, you know, suddenly you're left with dust bowl and there's just desolate town.
Yeah. And I'm not, definitely not expecting the app to be like, oh, people find it through the app. Like, people are going to find God Mode and then realize there's an app, definitely. But like my dream vision over the past week, as I've been thinking about this, was like, I'm going to be exporting my scorecard and posting it on Instagram as part of my engagement on there. And so like, I also didn't want to do the scorecard manually. And so I realized like, oh, it'd be nice if I just had the app already ready so that I could start using that, because I would like to.
Well, how most apps start, I feel like this, is as spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Do it in Numbers, do it in Google Drive.
Yeah.
If you wanted to be really brave and share your raw numbers and sort of almost open source the thing with the formulas and everything, you share it as a Google Sheets thing.
Sure.
And let people, you know, duplicate it and do their own. But either way, whether it's, you know, Numbers, if you're more familiar with that on the Mac, which I am, it's just nicer to use. Then I would, honestly, I would start there. And it's...
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, you know, like, if I could do that stuff in Notion, there might be ways to fudge it in Notion if you created a database, because there are certain things that you can do. There are formulas available in Notion. So yeah, and you can sum columns and you can average them. And so there may be some things that you could do there, but
I'm more familiar with a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's pretty shareable with Google Sheets. So that's an option. Yeah.
And so I would look into that. Because again, I think you've also got to battle test the routine of logging as well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like if you can make that routine as easy as possible, then great.
Yeah.
Like I've got, you know, I think I briefly mentioned it last week. I've got my day book in Notion now, which I'm having a lot of fun with, where I have the three things I want to accomplish today. Mm-hmm. I have all my Pomodori, which are units of 25 minutes of focus. So there's 14 of those and they're all just ready with the times ready for me to fill in what I did or what I intend to do. And then I put a little tick emoji next to it to say that I actually did it.
Yeah.
And so that's more about knowing that I stuck to the plan for the day. And then I've got space for notes and discoveries and things like that.
Nice.
And so getting into that, finding a satisfying way for you to be able to track those numbers is really good. And so, yeah, you know, if that's a numbers sheet, then that feels like it works well. And that's how I would start. And I know this isn't, and I, you know, I get disheartened and downhearted when people have these conversations with me, because it's like, I see the thing and I see how amazing it's going to be. And it's going to work beautifully and it's going to it's going to be everything. And like, you've seen the whole matrix. And that's why I have, you know, you have my deepest sympathies, Brendan, because you have seen the whole Matrix and it looks good.
It does.
And you know, you will earn it and you deserve it. But that's a great way to spend a shit ton of money, launch the app, and then go, well, what now?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't want to do that.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
For me, the real thing here is the IP, it's the protocol. And that's the thing that needs to be out in the world.
Yeah.
And this thing of being known for something, it's been in my head for a few days, and I've been trying to figure it out. And I ended up today, which is why I was a couple of minutes late to our call, because I got in the zone a little bit, setting up a Substack.
Mm.
Because I'm about 18 months to 2 years, not late, because I don't think I'm late to it, but you know, I'm not early. Sure. I'm not an early adopter. But it is blowing up, and lots of good creators are on there, and
including my father-in-law.
Yes, of course. And it has an inbuilt mechanism for discovery, and for recommendations, for sharing, and for liking and commenting, and you know, it can veer into social networking territory, but it allows you to communicate long form, and you can communicate in audio, and unlike Ghost, which I still love and use, you can do all of this for free. And that to me feels like a good place to start. I know writing isn't necessarily your favorite, but it doesn't have to be long form.
Yeah. Well, when you post on there, and like it goes out as a newsletter, of course, but then it also, it's saved as an archive, right?
Yeah, so you get a .substack.com address.
Yeah. Man, that might be... So I was also trying to make a website for God Mode, and I was using HubSpot, and like it was getting super complicated, and I'm like, yeah, I'm getting a bit overwhelmed, and like, oh man, there's so many ways I can make this great, but also this is going to take a lot of time. And all I really wanted the website for in the short term was to start posting recipes, start posting like some content.
So entergodmode.substack.com is available.
Not for long.
Yeah. I'm nabbing that now. Click. So I think, yeah, exactly. You know, sharing recipes, all that kind of stuff. The thing I put out today took me, you know, it took me longer to do all the setting up and setting an icon and all the rest of it than it did to write the post, which was probably 10 minutes. And it was, because I like this format, it was four things: watch, read, listen, do. So a video, an audio, I hate it when people say an audio, a piece of video, a piece of audio, something that another Substackian had written, who's a friend, and something to do, which was a breathwork thing.
Nice.
And minimal writing, mostly links, you know, a little bit of imagery, boom, done. And out the door. So, you know, sharing recipes, all, you know, like the thing you posted in the Discord, all those kinds of things, absolutely brilliant. You know, throw in your daily, or you throw in your daily logs, you know, if you did it every week, you could you know, put in your daily numbers. What you felt good about, what you felt bad about, that kind of stuff. But I would start probably with helping other people get into this just by sharing, like, almost just maybe sharing the tenets behind it as, like, as quotes from other people. So, like, sharing snippets of books or TED Talks or, you know, various videos and things that then later start to tie into this cohesive thing, but start by just collating the stuff that, you know, you have been collating for ages, and start by gathering those things, and then you can start tying the threads together.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think I'm going to start doing that.
Yay, we can be Substack friends.
We can be Substack friends. I like it.
Yeah, I will recommend you. And I will like your posts and I will comment on them.
I likewise.
And you can also set up memberships and, you know, get people to throw in some shekels, you know, should that be a thing that they do.
That I would like that.
So it's, you know, it's all beginnings.
Yeah. Awesome.
And you know, for me, it's very much just I need to be known for as the guy who talks about systems and frameworks for creative people. Something, you know, something along those lines. And so the Substack is another way of doing that. You know, the Undo is the in-depth, you know, entertainment sort of thing. And the Substack is, you know, is another way of doing that. And you know, being, because that's the job that we, both of us, have to do, is to build an audience of people who know us for a specific particular thing, for a, you know, a word or a phrase. That is our work to do.
Yeah. And I like the idea of working on the Substack more than I like the idea of working on an Instagram.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Which, not that I would do one exclusively over the other. I probably still do both, but I do like that idea more. So that's pretty cool. Thanks for that recommendation.
My pleasure. It's 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 funny, as you were talking earlier, I just thought this is a great idea for a podcast where people come on and it's like, wouldn't it be great if this thing, you know, this thing should exist and we just have like a half hour conversation and we talk about like how it could be made out into the world. But anyway, yes.
Yeah. That and then aside, you give the sobering advice that you shouldn't do it.
I end every call with no, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. Oh no.
I'll give it so just part of this and ways that I think it is useful. Just as I just hopped onto my Instagram to have a look as well. Not because I was distracted, but as part of the conversation. Yeah. I posted a thing yesterday. So I mentioned this breathwork thing on the Substack. I posted something this morning because you and I had a conversation over WhatsApp about it. I had one of those conversations that was very, you know, you found it unpleasant. And it was, you know, it was all fine, but it was just, you know, didn't feel good from a nervous system perspective. Sure. And picked up a breathwork technique, and that among two or three other little exercises helped regulated my nervous system and helped the body recognize that it was safe. And that really got me thinking, like, when we post stuff that feels like an act of service, or it's stuff that we need to remind ourselves of, it's almost like I'm putting this out on Instagram or wherever else so that I don't forget it, and so that I can look back on it later. I'm sort of pinning it in public for myself.
Yeah,
you do people a service. And so I posted this. And it's just a text post. Basically, it's just white text on a black background, effectively, with, you know, if you feel on edge because of a difficult encounter, your body might be feeling it's unsafe, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And little exercise that you can do. And I got a message. I got a comment today that says, I needed this yesterday too. Thank you for sharing.
Wonderful.
If you can do something that someone thanks you for,
yeah,
then you're on the right lines.
For sure.
If you can do something, if you can post something that someone says, oh, crap, I needed that, that isn't, you know, what a lot of this stuff is, which is just like empty rhetoric or empty platitudes on a nice, pretty background of a sunset. You know, if you're actually posting something really useful, did you know that if you did these things, you know, and someone thanks you for it, you know you're absolutely on the right lines, because
For sure,
you're not promoting anything. You know, you're being known as the person who disseminates this information.
That's,
you're not pushing anything.
Right.
And so, yeah, I just wanted to sort of share that little thought.
I like that, and thank you. Mm. I got some new ink.
Huh? Yeah, you did.
Wrist.
Yeah, you. did.
Tell me
all about it.
I have a self-imposed little rule for myself when I want to get a new tattoo is that I have to be obsessed with the idea for a year before I will allow myself to actually get the ink in.
That's so good.
And about a year and a month ago, a year and 2 months ago ish, I was in a refuge recovery meeting where it was an addiction recovery group therapy little meeting, and there's a gathering where we share our names, we do a 20-minute silent meditation, then we read from the book, and then we do a share, and then we do another like 5-minute meditation at the end. And during the maybe the reading is first before the first meditation. I can't remember. Anyways, during the meditation, I was thinking about Buddhist principles and, all the things that refuge recovery uses as their, lens, as their shift of the AA, format from Christianity to Buddhism. And which, that stuff all resonates so much more with me, the Buddhism aspect. And it came to me during my meditation, the concept of impermanence and how nothing lasts forever. And this is a good thing. The good things and the bad things in your life will come and go. So for both the good things and the bad things, cherish every moment of them because they won't last, and know that they won't last. So the bad things and the good things aren't going to stick around forever. So this too shall pass, but also live in the moment and appreciate what you have. And I was thinking about, like, for me, and I know for many other people, like, that's such a good thing to remember. And it'd be nice to have some sort of reminder all the time of the impermanent nature of our reality. And I'm like, what if that was tattooed on my wrist? and then I couldn't help but chuckle to myself at the idea of a permanent tattoo on my body that says impermanence.
This guy gets it.
And so that's where the germ came from. And I shared that in the share later in that meeting, and everybody laughed, and I was like, oh, I got a tickle of dopamine.
If I could get that every day just on my arm.
Exactly. So I thought about it for a while, and I started writing it on my wrist in Sharpie so it would last a couple days. And then I had the idea of wanting it in like a typewriter font. In all lowercase, and I don't exactly know where that came from, that desire, but it was there, and I was like excited about that aspect of it. And I liked how, like, I wanted to get a typewriter font that kind of had some like stuttering to it, like the stamp skipped and it hit twice on a few of the words or letters. And I downloaded a whole bunch of different typewriter fonts and like tried them all out in a Pages document. And I started like combining different fonts within the one word. And so like using the E from this one, but the N from that one and the M from this one and combining it all until I found I perfectly made exactly how I wanted it to look. And then, so I started kind of writing that on my wrist for a long time, and eventually I stopped writing it on my wrist, but I kept missing it. I was like, oh, there should be a tattoo there. It's like a perfect size for it, and I miss it. I want it. And so I
I can't believe I haven't said this yet, but you took a plain black marker and started writing on your wrist.
Yep.
I'm pinning that, by the way, but yes.
I have news about that too.
Yes.
So I looked up where I got my previous tattoo, my wolf tattoo, which is right below my impermanence tattoo, and we can talk about that in a sec. And the place where I got it done, Scapegoat Tattoo, is unfortunately out of business. So I had to look up a new place. So I went to New Rose Tattoo on Division Street here in Portland, Oregon, and had a wonderful time with Carrie, who was my artist. And so it's both the letters. And the reason why I picked her was that she likes doing lettering. Apparently, right. That's not something that all tattoo artists like to do.
Yes. It's very and precise.
There has never been a time where I have checked the spelling of something more times than this. Because while it is a word that I think about a lot, it is not a word that I write out a lot. And so making sure that I... Yeah. Otherwise, I did spell check so many times. I put it into Google. I put it into GPT and other things just to make sure I had it right. Yeah. And now, this is so funny. I didn't notice this until I had it tattooed on my hand, on my wrist, which that sounds like it could be really scary.
No. We don't like that sentence. Nothing good starts with. I never realized this until I had it tattooed on my wrist. But
I now see the word in a different way.
Because you see it upside down.
No, I got it. I get it right. I got it right side up. Oh, okay. I got it. My tattoos are for me. They're on my wrist.
Of course.
I don't want to see it upside down. That's ridiculous.
No, that'd be stupid. So the other people can see it when you give them a high five.
Impermanent high five.
Yeah. It doesn't last very long. That's what they'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, if somebody's trying to read my inner wrist while it's hanging down by my side, like, good luck to them anyway. Whatever. But now that I look at it, I see a sort of, not a compound word, but a three-part word that is fragments of three other words.
Whoa.
All smushed together. And not, it's not just impermanence as in the nature of things go away, mm-hmm. but now it's imperfect human existence.
Whoa. Okay.
And like, shit, like I love that. Like that ties in with my wolf tattoo right below it. It's kind of like a wonderful, not a wonderful mantra, but it's like a good reminder of like, we're all trying our best, but there's no perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I got it on my hand and now I love it even more. Like it has even more meaning for me now. It's like, what? So cool. So so it's right above. I added some stars around it because I love stars. Mm. And I think that they look really good in tattoo form. And it kind of ties it in a bit with the wolf tattoo below it, which also has stars in it. And the wolf tattoo I got as that actually I had planned for over 2 years before I got it tattooed, but I wanted to, my goal for that one was to give it to myself as a 1 year clean, present to myself for being off of my addictions.
Mm.
And, so it's a wolf logo that I found and made some modifications to it, adding white stars on the black hide and some black stars at the bottom of it that kind of fall down away and some shading. And so it's a two-toned kind of wolf face and neck. And the idea behind it is there's a Native American parable about the two wolves, and it goes something like this, that inside each of us, there are two wolves fighting. There's a white wolf that's fighting for joy and peace and love. And there's a dark wolf that is fear and anxiety and hatred and greed. And through the parable, the end of the parable is the wolf that wins in this battle is the one that you feed. And
yes.
Yeah. And so that was a mantra that was a lesson that my ex-wife and I constantly used through my journey, my early journey through addiction recovery. And I really like wolves. Wolves, I feel like, would probably be my spirit animal. And so that was exciting to me. And I felt like it would be a great reminder to have that on my wrist of like always choose the good wolf. And I feel like it has done that. It has helped. I have thought about that quite often, considering all this ink that's on my wrist or my inner. Yeah, wrist? No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. So the stars on the white stars on the black hide are my efforts to punch through and do good where there is bad. And the black stars fading down at the bottom are the badness that's in me, that's inherent in me, is fading away and being pushed out. And so it's static. It's permanent. It's not actually becoming the white wolf entirely, because it can't, because it is our imperfect human existence to always be striving and always have challenges, always have that darkness within us.
And in you know, a lot of these sorts of circles, especially when we come into certain dynamics, we talk about shadows.
Yes.
And you know, you will always have these shadows that you carry with you.
Yep.
Everything is everything.
Everything is everything. So yeah, I'm really happy with my new ink.
I love that. So two things. Firstly,
tell me.
You didn't know this, but back in the MySpace days, back in 2005, I released a song on MySpace under the name Bad Wolf. That was going to be so I was myspace.com/badwolfmusic.
Is that still active?
No, I think Timberlake bought MySpace. And it all changed. But it was there for a good wee while. And it was the first version of my song Keeper on the Phone that I'd written maybe the year before that I'd recorded. And it was one of those where, another side tangent, I've started writing down little, I've literally just called them notes, but in a sort of slightly deliberate way. I wanted to create, and I've been obsessed, I'm sorry, I know I'm going all over, but hopefully these all tie back. I've been slightly obsessed with the notion of little addressable units of like wisdom or like knowledge or insight or just, and I love the atomic unit of that. And I wanted to create these atomic little units. And so nice. I've just been writing them down as they occur to me. And I'll share them. And the breathwork thing is actually one of them. At some point they will have numbers. So, you know, you can refer to like note number 32 and it sort of means this, you know, as a shorthand.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the creative struggle, I ended up writing about this yesterday, is that, or it might have been this morning, the idea that we will never achieve, and we've talked about this in a few episodes before, like we're never going to achieve, if we just look at music, the sound that we want, we'll never fully get there.
Yeah.
We're always reaching, you know, it's a man's reach exceeds his grasp or whatever. We're always
folly.
we're always just like a little bit off and we're never quite there. But the creative pursuit is that you keep trying.
Yeah.
And it's like the carrot strapped to a GoPro on a donkey's head. Like as the donkey keeps moving, the carrot keeps moving, but the donkey keeps walking towards the carrot.
Yeah.
And it's like that for us, that, you know, as we get better, as you know, whatever your art is,
as you get better at that, your standards rise, and you can never quite attain that level that you want. And that version of that song is a reminder of that. It never turned out the way I wanted it. And the version that I have now is the closest I've managed to get. So that was Bad Wolf. And so that was thing number one.
How did you come up with the name Bad Wolf? How did that come about?
Doctor Who.
Okay.
So it must have been, it was 2005 when Doctor Who got rebooted with Christopher Eccleston. They did a quite nice thing where they, and it was unexpected, certainly by me, is they had this running theme throughout the first season or series. And it was the words Bad Wolf. It turned out like they were encoded into the episodes. And so there was there was an episode in Wales, and there was mention of Blythe Drwg, which I still remember now being Welsh for Bad Wolf. And so there were little clues and things like that. And it comes out at the end. I can't remember how it comes out, but Billy Piper is involved. She was the first Doctor's assistant.
Yeah.
Or companion. And I thought Bad Wolf, that's quite cool. And nice. So simple as that. It came from that.
So I've been going back and forth with Frank Turner's record label about distribution for my remix of his song Get Better, which that sentence is just like mind-blowing to me.
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
Holy shit. And they're all on board. Like they're like, yeah, this is a good song. This is great. So I got an email today, them saying, yeah, we think that you should go ahead and release it yourself, and we'll split the profit 50-50 with Frank, and Frank will retain 100% of the publishing rights. And I'm happy with that personally. Like for me, it's just it's just a one song deal, so it's like, I don't need, I expect that unless Frank shares it somehow.
Oh yeah. Like it's gonna get
12 listens, you know, like I'm not expecting this thing to fly off the handle or anything. So I was looking into, ways for me to distribute it myself. And I don't really want to go with Amuse again, because both Amuse and DistroKid, and I looked up a bunch of others, they all want either a monthly or yearly subscription to have it up. And I'm like, well, this is just for fun. This isn't going anywhere. And then I rediscovered an old favorite of CD Baby, and their situation is a one-time $10 fee, and then they take 9% of royalties that come in, and instead of like 3% from other places, but then they have the monthly fee, which is like $3 a month, and it's like, I'm just going to be losing a ton of money from that. But a $10 fee, I can do that, and I don't expect to get any royalties anyway, so that doesn't really bother me. And then it's up there forever. It's not supposed to be able to be taken down. So that's currently what I'm thinking about. And I sent them a bunch of questions, like, cause he said, we'll split the profit 50-50. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, does that mean I start paying you after I've recouped my $10, or like, what do you mean profit or revenue? And then, and then I'm not sure if it should be published as a cover, and if I need the mechanical license and how that works. So I asked some questions about that, and we'll see what they say.
I would think CD Baby may have specific requirements that you need to prove on that front. And it may be that you can forward an email chain that says, yeah, this is clearly and demonstrably Frank Turner and his people that have given this the written green light. Maybe that's enough. I don't know.
Yeah. But I asked that of the record label contact I have, Like, what?
But also,
do I need anything else?
Yeah. Also, when I did the Midyear cover through Amuse, there is some sort of, I can't remember if there was a specific, yeah, I think there's like a specific number, like an ISBN, which it would be slightly different from mine because it was a cover, so it didn't need mechanical rights, but it did need the writing credits or the, you know, the lyric rights. And that was all handled. So as long, because it's really just about who do they give some of those royalties to. So Frank will earn money anyway from the, so yeah. So I guess it's his label that's getting the split, because presumably his label owns the song.
Right.
He's also going to get writing credit anyway and the performance.
Yeah.
I keep saying credit, but yeah, the performance royalty, and then the split. So, wow, that's, I mean, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, fair enough.
How the record labels win. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what are you going to do? Say no.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's how they get you.
I mean, yeah, I could negotiate, but honestly, I don't really care. Well,
what's, you know, with the best will in the world, and I love you very much, you ain't got a leg to stand on.
Right.
You're like, what are you going to do? You haven't got any negotiating power on that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, who knows what the doors it could open, or, you know, even just the goodwill alone, I think, is just, it's worth it. Just like,
yeah,
make it not a problem.
I mean, the whole point was of doing the thing was to get you to dance, and that worked anyway. Like, you came over and took a selfie video with me, and I was just dancing, and like, achievement unlocked. Like, that was the whole point. Which is also like, just that happened to me is just so perfectly amazing. I'm still in awe that it worked out so perfectly. Like that, you got so excited with the song, you didn't know it was my remix. You found out it was, and then you found out about Frank, and it's just like the whole thing was so beautiful.
It was a beautiful layer cake.
Mm. So we both watched a movie last night.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, The Menu.
Yeah, we did. Mm.
With Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
And Anya something.
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah.
From the chess thing.
Right. Yep. From the chess thing.
Yeah.
Oh, and the guy that was in the boy from About a Boy.
The boy from About. The boy Nicole, who was about.
Yeah. I always forget his name.
Yeah. It'll come to me in a minute. Yes. What a little turd man he turned out to be. So I guess spoilers abound.
Spoilers abound, yes.
Spoiler horn.
So it was labeled as a horror comedy in Netflix. And I was like, interesting. I'm curious. And from the little preview it gave of them just talking about not being able to eat food at the beginning, I was just like, all right, I'm interested. Like, what's going on with this? So the basic premise is a group of people go to this super fancy restaurant on an island that they have to take a little ferry to get to. And then, the boat goes away. People are stuck on the island at this restaurant.
So straight away you're like, Poirot, locked room mystery.
Yeah.
You know, it's that, you know, that's yeah. Someone's going to get picked off one by one. It's a locked room. Okay, let's go.
Yeah.
No cell signal. Let's go.
Yeah.
We know what this is.
Yeah. And all the staff is acting like really creepy and guiding the experience. And it's both a little bit like, oh, you're in.
Yeah. So like you're adding like Wicker Man type stuff. You're adding like, old, like, you know, village ritual, just everyone's a little bit like, please go back to your seat now, sir. Like, yeah, the villagers are just a bit weird. Yeah, you're adding that into it as well. So, like, lots of tropes.
Yep, yep. And then, then they sit down for this meal, and it's like, you know, like a 7-course meal or whatever, and each plating has a story behind it, and Ralph Fiennes is the chef. Yes, Chef.
Yes, Chef.
We love you too, Chef.
We love you too, Chef.
And he would do a big clap to get everybody's attention. And it's like, all right, we're going to plate this meal. And here's the story. And, you know,
and I loved that the on screen, we had the description of each mm-hmm. menu item as well. Mm-hmm. I thought that mm-hmm. was perfect, especially as things progress.
Yeah. And they're beautiful. Especially the last one. Oh my gosh. All right. A couple of the last ones. Yeah. They're awesome. They're all amazing. The scallop on the rock with the little seaweed and stuff like that would look just so beautiful.
And that's where we're introduced to the couple that I loved. I loved the restaurant critic.
Oh yeah.
And the simpering guy from the magazine. I thought they were on a date to begin with. I thought he was her toy boy. And so I seeing it through that lens, I loved it even more because he's just like, he's trying so hard to live up to her level.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She's pointing out these things and he's just going, yeah, no, yeah. I can smell that.
I saw that too, but I didn't say anything.
You don't know, buddy. You don't know.
Yeah.
I love that. So, so well observed.
Yeah. And so all of the patrons, let's call them, are being monitored constantly by the staff and everything. And it's like there's
and have been before they
they've researched for sure. And I liked how that reviewer noticed how on the accompaniments with no bread. You shall have no bread. You just get the accompaniments. Notice how one of the oil and vinegar was kind of separated.
The emulsion or whatever it was called.
Yeah. And she noticed that. And so they brought her out a little dish of more non-emulsified.
It was massive.
and then they brought a big giant.
And then they bring out a saucer. A vat of it later.
we know you wanted more. Just a troller. Oh, it was fantastic. So we're seeing this through the whole movie is kind of mainly through the eyes of one person who's not supposed to be there, the outsider, who's on a date with a guy who is obsessed with the whole experience, with this restaurant, with this chef. He's really excited for whatever's to come, and he's just always game, always excited. But he was supposed to bring somebody else. And during their research phase beforehand, they researched this other person. And then they broke up.
I might be wrong, but I thought it was he was the only one that was told. And massive spoilers.
Yes.
He was the only one who was told that all the patrons were going to die.
It seemed like he was the only one that knew. Yeah.
Yeah. And Ray Fine says that.
Yeah.
You know, we texted back and forth and I told you that everyone was going to die. And then mysteriously, your girlfriend didn't want to come.
Yeah.
So that's how I read it. It was like, she clocked this. And I'm like, I don't want to die. So he brings a hooker instead.
Yeah. Yeah.
A sex worker. Sorry.
I mean, yeah. I love that. I love how she just leaps across the table and starts slapping him in the face. It's like, you motherfucker, you knew that I was going to die?
Yeah.
And you brought me,
you brought me here. He calls her a child because
he
doesn't appreciate
awful.
There's so many things about food that are just so bullshit,
yes.
And it's wonderful how it's done. Like,
yes.
he's looking at that first dish and laughing and going, oh, no, that's really very funny. It's like, what the fuck are you talking
about?
He's
so pretentious about food, yeah.
Yes.
And
like
but
the
also,
wine, the wine descriptions, head with longing and regret, like, absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Love some longing and regret. Yeah, but also like I, as someone who's been pretty obsessed with food lately, and plating a good dish and serving really high quality things, like I found a lot of joy in the way that they were presenting food and how that mattered and what they were putting together and how much care they were taking, like 182 days of curing for the meat, because 183 would the parasite
would cause bacteria
would,
to
the bacteria yeah. would go to your brain. Yeah. It's a good thing we know what we're doing. Oh man, so fantastic. Yeah, so there's like the third dish or whatever is by one of the sous chefs, and
Jesus.
they lay down plastic, and like they come out and are presenting this secondary dish. It's called the mess. Yeah, and this is like where we're first introduced to the concept of how fucked this is all gonna get. And
it's all part of the menu. This is all part of the menu.
Yeah, and so he after a little. Degrading and
breaking of dreams. To watch.
Yeah, the guy sticks a gun in his mouth and shoots himself, and like everybody is like, you know, suitably freaked out, mm-hmm. and then you know there's the justifications like, oh, it must have been a squib. Wow, it looked really realistic. Like, there's no way this guy just freaking shot himself right in front of us. So we have to make up a story. And so they all kind of just sit down again and we're like,
and of course the food really critic fucked. Is like, I think this is actually all for us. And she says it later, but like, this is all for our benefit. Yeah. No, it's all okay. It's all fine. I've checked. It's all fine.
Yeah. No, this is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. There's people getting split up where they're all taken outside and the men are given a 45-second head start.
Yeah.
For the and then dish, all the staff have to chase
the
them.
The dish that's called Men's Folly.
Men's Folly! And the restaurant critic's toy boy is the last to be caught, so he gets given a special egg. He gets given an egg as a little well done.
Yeah, and he's hiding in the chicken
the
scoop.
Of this little shed.
Yeah, the chicken scoop. Yeah, because he's a little chicken, because he was just tucked away hiding. And he's like, thank you.
And they all get led back. Oh, and you know, in the intervening time, a guy's tried to leave and they lop his finger off and he's sat there crying for ages.
Yeah.
And then people sit back down and start eating again.
Uh-huh.
It's incredible. It's so good. And what I loved is that bit. I was very aware of it and really enjoying it of how many plates, forgive the accidental, you know, the metaphor collision, but how many plates the film was spinning at that time?
Yeah.
There's these things it's keeping up in the air and doing it so well. It's like, okay, we've got this little thing about the story of the guy with the finger. We also mm-hmm. know that they've had this taco night thing where there's been images printed on the taco shells that are all pertinent to things within these lives as all subtle little fuck yous.
Uh-huh.
And then you find out there's the thing between Margot, the sex worker, and the guy with the finger. So all these little bits, they're all, you know, the film is balancing them all really well and panning or cutting between them. And like, you're never, it's very satisfying actually in that way. Yeah. Like, you're never bored. And there's always just that little, you know, a little tidbit to gnaw on. It's wonderful.
Yeah. And I like how they I like the dynamic between Chef and Margot and the person who's not supposed to be here, the person I wasn't prepared for, and their dynamic of like, well, yeah, I mean, you can choose to be back here with us, or you can choose to be one of them, a giver or a taker. And she's like, well, which one will help me not die? And it's like, oh no, everyone's dying tonight.
Right.
And she's like, so I guess it doesn't matter. Like, and she's, mm-hmm. yeah, she's just, you know, in shock, but, you know, trying to see her way out, and eventually gets given a task to go get a container for one of the meals, and has a wonderful little interaction with the
maitre d.
And kills her after a bunch of people have already died, so it was like, all right, death is already on the table, like I'm fighting to survive here, obviously, and she's being told that she's going to be murdered, and then she finds a secret room where she kind of learned some history about the chef, and
it's the chef's special room that you're not allowed to go into.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love how she uses that at the end to be like, I'm not satisfied. I want to send my food back. And he's like, and that really gets him. He's like, he finally snaps him out of it, and she says the right things, and then
there was a wonderful moment actually that I was kind of touched by, and I don't know how much the film wanted to lean on it, but it certainly there was something that twigged for me where there was sort of a moment where he's at the height of his pomp. It's not at the point where he's like he's making the cheeseburger after he's, you know, become a supplicant. But it's when he's still kind of at his height, he has this thing where he's like, no matter how, and these aren't the words he said, but like the inference for me was like, no matter to what heights you ascend, we're all just in the service industry. We're all just, we're all just cooking for people. Like we're all just here kind of at the, you know, whether you are the big chef, where you're the sous chef, or you're a fry cook, you know, at McDonald's, like there was something there about a real leveling about like, we're all in the service industry. And there was something I really cottoned onto there about no matter where you are, no matter what levels of sophistication, you're still being paid to put something in someone's mouth, you know, to make something for them to put in their mouth. And it's just at its base level, like it, you know, ding, order up, you know, like whatever it is, it's still that.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting.
I liked
in among all the class stuff.
For sure. So there, one of the other plates that was spinning is that all of these people are purposefully selected for this last meal that are all going to die because they should all die for some reason. Mm-hmm. And so there's the guy who brings Margot as the date, like he is kind of like a downfall of modern cuisine because he's like he pretends he knows and is so pretentious about it. There's the
best plate is Tyler's bullshit. Because that's what it's called.
Yeah.
It was called Tyler's bullshit, and the description was wonderful. It's just
undercooked lamb,
inedible sauce. And then I can't remember what the end was, but it was just like, you know, some bullshit.
Yeah, and there's the food critic that has shut down so many different restaurants that were great. There is the couple that come like 11 times and can't remember a single name of a dish.
Yes.
There's his mother.
That might be why he lost the finger, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 exactly. There's the trio that work for the guy that owns
the tech bros.
The tech bros that have been lying and their tax returns or whatever are on the tortillas. And then there's the movie star.
Oh, this is like, so great. I looked in IMDb. He's literally just called movie star. He doesn't have a name. How brilliant is that?
It's so great. Played by the wonderful John Leguizamo.
Yes.
And his folly, his downfall was that he was in a movie that Chef didn't like.
Because he watched it on a bad day. He had a beat. It was his only day off. And so he had to watch this film and he didn't like it. And so he had to die.
Yeah. And then he was like, and then Chef was like, you're not trying hard enough with your art and this and that. And he's like, all right, that's fine. But what about my date? And then he was like, you went to Brown, right? Yeah. Do you have any student loans? No. You deserve to die.
you're dying. Yeah. actual owner of the restaurant who has been hoisted up in like a big crane and is being dangled down by wires and is then summarily just dumped into the sea.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Woof. Have you seen Triangle of Sadness?
Never heard of it.
Okay. It's on Prime, I believe.
Okay.
And... it is, it's very different, but there are definite corollaries. Mm. There are some definite sort of linkages. I haven't looked it up actually to see if there's a connection between them, but there's a definite through line. It's harder to watch, but it's worth it.
Nice.
It's not good if you have emetophobia. I will say that because there's a lot of puking.
Oh, okay.
There's a bit where like people get violent, like the whole ship gets violent food poisoning. It's on a ship, a cruise ship, and they all get violent food poisoning, and it's ridiculous. Anyway, there are definite shades of that. And the way it ends is just like I really thought of what's the film you and I watched with Daniel Craig doing his best accent, southern accent,
Knives Out.
When you were here, the second one,
Glass Onion.
Glass Onion, yeah. Of the sort of the way that ends and walking away from a burning building, and you know you've got your girl, the Margot, the sex worker, eating her, and that was just described as just like a well made. It was just like the menu item was just like it's just a well made cheeseburger.
Yep, yep,
brilliant.
Yeah, and then the description of the explosion that they all die s'mores. At the end. The s'mores. Oh my god, yeah, the s'mores. Dressed up in these like marshmallow shawls that they put on everybody with a chocolate hat.
Little chocolate fez.
and then there's this massive explosion that Margot sees as she's escaping on the boat, eating her hamburger, cheeseburger. And then it gives the menu description of the s'mores, and it was like it labeled the humans on there as well as ingredients, the chef and the chef, the cooks and stuff. Oh, it's so great. So great.
Yeah. Wonderful film.
Yeah. Chef's kiss.
That was a last minute addition to my evening, and I'm glad you,
I'd rate it 5 stars, would not go again. And as always, why do I forget my own catchphrase? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, chef!
Hello. I wasn't looking. Hello. Let's get that. Okay. We're all set up here. Let's get this
kind of.
All right. Who's fiddling with all of my things?
Everything is that's making
me.
Noise.
I am. Okay. That's great. Great for the after show. All right.
you get it.